Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
So I heard earlier in the service, Amy did a little top 10 list of the top 10 least or most unexpected commandments. And I'm not bragging or anything, but I think I know the Bible a little bit more than Amy does. And so I think there are actually 10 more unexpected commandments than even Amy gave you. Do you guys want to hear the true top 10 most unexpected commandments? This is what I like to call a top 10 throwdown. It's on. You guys ready? Here are the real top 10 unexpected commandments in the Bible. Number 10, you must follow the eating of corn on the cob with a good flossing of thy teeth. That's just good advice. Number 9, once a year there must be the releasing of a new Fast and the Furious movie, for the Lord loves a good car chase. Number 8, when thou is lost and doesn't know which way to go, always remember, Glenn Lerner is the way to go. Call 8. Nice. Number 7, between thyself and other occupants, thou shalt leave at least one urinal. Half of us understand. Number 6, do not stray far from this teaching. Whoever smelt it, dealt it. You didn't know that was in the Bible, did you? Number 5, thou shalt not ding-dong ditch thy teacher, unless thy teacher is a real tool. Number 4, and he saith unto them, thou art not going to pay a lot for this muffler. Number 3, if thou is about to eat Oreos, have a glass of milk nearby. Yum, thus saith the Lord. Number 2, maybe, you shall only have one Dumb and Dumber movie. One is enough. Trust thy Lord. If we had only listened. And the number 1, most unexpected commandment in the Bible, I command thee, someone must Wang Chung tonight. There they are, the true top 10. Thank you very much. Boom. All right. Well, hey, we're talking about rules today, and I'm just going to tell you that I have always hated rules. Like, if there was a rule my whole life, I wanted to break it. But, like, I just wanted to be free. And so many rules seem pointless. And then there are some rules that just are pointless. Like, in our country, there are laws that are so ridiculous, you wouldn't believe that they're real, except for the fact that they're real. Let me share with you some examples. So these are actual laws in our country. I'm not making this stuff up. So for instance, in Oklahoma, it's illegal to have a sleeping donkey in your bathtub after 7 p.m. In Alabama, it's illegal to wear a fake mustache in church. And it's illegal in Alabama to have an ice cream cone in your back pocket. I'm serious. In California, it's illegal to have a dog pursue a bear. There is a U.S. federal law making it illegal to issue a fake Weather Bureau forecast. By the way, the Weather Bureau is predicting a tsunami for Las Vegas next week. Don't know if you heard that. Breaking the law. In Zion, Illinois, it's illegal to give a cat or a dog a lighted cigar. It's like, let them light them themselves. In Baltimore, Maryland, last one, it's illegal, truly, to take a lion to the movies. Now what am I supposed to do when I'm in Baltimore? Thanks a lot. You know, some rules are just dumb, and I've just always been a person who just hated rules. And I just didn't want to follow them. I just wanted to be free. So today we're continuing our brand new series called Why Would God? And the question we're going to wrestle with today is, why would God make being a Christian all about following rules? Isn't it? There's like all these rules in the Bible, and if you become a Christian, you have to agree to follow all the rules. And if you become a Christian, I mean, really, you're just like missing out on being free, right? It's a really important question. And it is true that when you decide to become a Christian, you're agreeing to live life the way that God wants you to live life. And there are some rules. So here's what I want to do. I want to give you 2 reasons for obeying God, and at least one of them might really surprise you. Okay, 2 reasons for obeying God. The first, and this is the one that might surprise you, is that obeying God actually increases the freedom that matters most. obeying God actually increases your freedom. In fact, you might be surprised to find this out, but God is all about your freedom. In fact, did you know that when God had the world exactly the way he wanted, there was only one rule? True, God said, listen, there's only one rule. One thing you can't do. Other than that, you are completely free to do anything. Just one rule. God is not into rules. Now, you might ask, well, why one rule? Like why not no rules? Why did God give any rule? And what was that one rule all about? Well, basically, the one rule was, let God be your God. Let God be your God. You are going to have an ultimate authority in life. And God was saying, I need to be your ultimate authority. And the tangible way that God did that was by having one restricted tree, the fruit of which the people could not eat, but they could eat of every other tree. But at the heart of that rule was the heart of the people who were being asked to follow it. Would they obey God or not? Would they submit themselves to God's authority, or would they choose to be their own ultimate authority? Now, you might ask, why? Like, why is it such a big deal to God that he be the ultimate authority and the people submit to him? Well, I am totally convinced that a big part of it is that God is all about our freedom, and he knows that we can't be free apart from him. We can't be free apart from him. Now, that might sound odd to you. You know, the idea that you can't be free apart from something. Isn't freedom being free from something else? So how would it be that you can't be free apart from something else? But it's really not a weird idea, and we see this all the time. Here's a couple ways to think about this. First is, think about a fish. Like you got a little goldfish in a little goldfish bowl, okay? And you got this fish, and it's kind of happy. It's swimming around the bowl, right? But it realizes it's not completely free, and it wants to be free. So one day the fish says, I want to be free. And it's like, I'm free. I'm not free. Right? What happens is if this fish decides that it wants to be free of the constriction of water, it's not free. It's dead. Right? It's dead. And the truth is, water is the confinement that actually liberates the fish. That's just its nature. And a fish will die if it does not honor its nature. And in the same way, what we learn in the Bible is that our nature is that we need to be connected to God and live life in his love and under his authority for us to truly be free. Living that way actually liberates us. And when we choose to not live in that way, when we choose to have absolute freedom, what actually happens is we lose our freedom. One more comparison. You take a child who wants to be their own boss, doesn't want to listen to anything mom or dad says, not going to listen. Is that kid going to experience true freedom? No, that kid is going to be a disaster, right? It is, because they're living for absolute freedom with no authority. That doesn't give you a free life. That's a disaster, and the kid can't handle that. And whether we like to admit it or not, and we don't because we're adults and we're mature, but we're the same way. We're the same way. So God had the world just the way he wanted, only one rule, but Adam and Eve, the Bible says, choose to break that rule, and so they fall out of their relationship with God. They've chosen for him to not be the ultimate authority of their lives. Instead, they're going to be their own ultimate authority. And it goes on that way for a long time. Not only for Adam and Eve, but for their descendants and their descendants. They're called the Israelites. And what happens is that the Israelites end up in slavery in Egypt. What they did was they traded freedom within a relationship with God, living life under God's authority, but freedom for slavery. That's the choice they made. But finally, after years of slavery, they cry out to God. That they're like, we're wrong, we made the wrong choice, we want you, we want to be free. And so what God does in response to their cry is he leads them out of slavery. And so finally, these people have decided that they want a relationship with God. And what happens next is that God gives them rules. This is where God gives them the Ten Commandments. Before this point, they didn't want God, and God had not given a rule since that original rule in the beginning that they had chosen not to follow. But now that they've chosen to have a relationship with God, God gives them rules to follow. Okay? And I want to make sure that you hear this, because it's incredibly important to understand about the rules that God gives us. And it seems like almost no one understands this. The rules are not designed to lead us into a relationship with God. They're designed to help us have freedom within our relationship with God, because we already have chosen to have a relationship with God. So this is one of the biggest theological mistakes that people make. And it's, if you make this mistake, it's huge, okay? So for instance, surveys are done a lot, and they'll go out in the street and they'll ask hundreds, thousands of people. They'll ask, when you die, will you go to heaven? Okay? Just to yourself, I wonder, how would you answer that question? Okay? And what most people answer is that they typically will say this. They'll say, yeah, I think so. And then the follow-up question is, okay, why? Why will you go to heaven? I wonder what you would answer to that question. Here's the answer the majority of people give. They say something like, well, I do pretty well at keeping the Ten Commandments. I wonder maybe if you answered that. Okay, but what does that have to do with it? What does that have to do with getting into heaven? You know, chances are, the truth probably is, you haven't done that well at keeping the Ten Commandments. But even if you have, what does that have to do with getting into heaven? And the answer is absolutely nothing. Following the Ten Commandments has nothing to do with getting into heaven. Heaven is for people who have chosen to love God and worship God and have a relationship with God, and that they want to be with God. That's what heaven is, and that's what heaven is for. And God did not give the Ten Commandments to the Israelites to kind of lead them into a relationship with him. He gave them to them because they had already chosen to be in a relationship with him. That's why he hadn't given commandments for all those years, because they hadn't made that choice. They were rules to follow within the relationship, not to establish a relationship. Okay? Think of it this way. Let's say you go up to some dude here at church and you say, excuse me, are you married to Jen? The Jennifer, she volunteers some in the preschool class and sometimes back at the Velcro bar, that Jennifer. And this guy says, yeah, I think so. And you give the follow-up question. You say, why? Why do you think so? And this guy says, well, I mean, I've always been nice to her. I've never lied to her, never hit her. I've done some good things. Like, I got her coffee once. I've never offended her, so I'm pretty sure we're married. No, I'm married to Jen that volunteers. No, it's me. I married to her. Keeping the rules of marriage does not make you married to her, right? Being nice to her doesn't make you married to her. I'm married to her, not because I keep the rules of marriage. I'm married to her because 20 years ago, I asked her. And she said yes, and we went through a wedding ceremony, right? And I should keep the rules of marriage because I love her, but even if I don't, we're still married, right? Keeping the rules doesn't get you into a relationship with someone. And in the same way, keeping the Ten Commandments, keeping God's rules, does not make me a Christian, and it will not get me into heaven, and it won't get you into heaven either. No, I'm a Christian and I am going to go to heaven because God asked me, and 24 years ago I said yes, and I went through this ceremony called baptism. And now I should keep God's rules because I love him and because it's best for me. It's how I'm going to experience freedom in my life. But even if I don't keep the rules, we still have a relationship and I'm still going to heaven because It has nothing to do with keeping rules. It has everything to do with God in love asking me to have a relationship with him, me saying yes. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? Here's another way of thinking about it. Let's say that you have a dog, okay? And you love your dog, and so you decide, I want my dog to be free and experience freedom, and so I want it to run around the front yard. Let's just pretend you have a front yard. Most of us probably don't have a front yard, but let's pretend. And so you say, I want my dog to run around the front yard free. What would you do? You'd put a fence around your yard, right? Why? Because you want your dog to be free. Your dog can't run around your front yard free if there's no fence around it, right? You would put a restriction on your dog so that it can experience true freedom running around without the fear of a car barreling down on it, right? Same thing God does with us. Because he loves us and he wants us to experience freedom, he puts a fence around our behavior, right? He gives us some rules. Why? So we can really experience freedom living within those restrictions. Okay, so you got this dog, you put a fence around your yard. Your dog's, man, I'm sounding crazy today. I've got issues. Get to know me. But the fence that you put around your yard has nothing to do with whether or not your dog belongs to you, right? The fence doesn't make it your dog. No, you put the fence in because it was already your dog. And if your dog somehow escapes the fence, if it doesn't obey the restrictions, it doesn't stop being your dog. You're not like, oh, it's not our dog anymore. No, it's still your dog, right? And if somebody else's dog just happened to wander into your yard, that's not how dogs don't actually wander into a yard like this. I don't know what that was. That was weird. But if some dog wandered in here, woof, woof, and you got a different dog in here, you wouldn't go out and go, oh, look, we got another dog. Now that dog's our dog because it's in our fence. No, you'd be like, that's not our dog, right? Even though it's obeying your restrictions, it's not your dog. What makes your dog is that it's your dog. Right? That's it, right? And God gives rules to people because they're his people. That's why he puts a fence around our behavior. And if someone just happens to follow the rules, if they live within those restrictions, that doesn't make them a Christian. It doesn't mean that they're going to go to heaven. They're not, right? And if a person who has chosen to have a relationship with God escapes those restrictions and stops following the rules, still belong to God because it's not about following the rules. It's like I set rules for my kids, right? I don't set rules for your kids. I would like to set some rules for some of your kids, but I don't set rules for your kids because they're your kids, right? I set rules for my kids, and my kids did not become my kids because they followed my rules, right? They got rules because they were already my kids. If they stop following my rules, they don't cease to be my kids. They're still my kids, right? And God has given you these rules when and if you choose to be a part of his family, not to help you figure out how to get into his family or get into heaven. Right now, a bunch of you should probably be going, that's awesome news, right? That's really good news because you need to hear this, because what this means is that God is inviting you because of his love into a relationship with him. God is not saying, hey, if you can follow the rules good enough, there's this mysterious level, the standard you need to get to, and if you can get to it, I'm going to let you into heaven someday and I'll love you. No, God's saying, I love you already, and would you come into a relationship with me? And all you have to do is say yes. Whew. That's good news. And now that I come into God's family, I should follow his rules. Why? Because I've chosen to love God, because they're for my best. I'll experience freedom that way. But even if I don't follow the rules, I've chosen to be a part of God's family. And I'm in, right? That is good news. And it's only within a relationship with God that he gives you rules, which is exactly what happens with those Israelites, right? So they've been in slavery. They haven't wanted God. God hadn't given them a rule. Then they choose, God, we want you. We need you. Help us. God leads them out of slavery. He says, okay, now there's going to be rules because you've chosen to be in a relationship with me. And so God gives them the Ten Commandments. Hey, let's do this. Let's walk through the Ten Commandments real quick. And I know maybe you've heard of them. Maybe you could name some or all of them. But here's what I want to do. I just want to walk through them real quick. And I want to ask you a question after we do. Okay? So put your thinking hats on. Think about these commandments as we walk through them. We're going to put them on the screen. So the first commandment is, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt. We talked about that. Out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. It's like God saying like, okay, so listen, you chose to make me your God. And if I'm going to be your God, then you can't have any other gods. And if I'm going to be your God, then you can't be your God. Like, you can't be your ultimate authority. You've chosen for me to be your ultimate authority, right? Second commandment. God says, you shall not make for yourself an idol, for I am a jealous God. Basically, what God's saying here is, listen, don't put your hope in. Don't find your identity in anything that's not me. Because if you put your hope in something, or if you find your identity in something that's not me, that's called an idol. And the problem is, nothing other than God is big enough for you to put your hope in. Nothing other than God is big enough for you to find your identity in. And so God knows that if you choose something else, your career, your a relationship, money, anything else, if you choose something else to put your hope in and find your identity in, your life is not going to work. It's too small, okay? In fact, if you do that, you'll end up back in slavery in some way or another. So, third commandment, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. You know, vain means nothing, right? Like if you said, man, I did all that work and it was all in vain. You'd be saying, I did it all for nothing, right? And so God's saying, don't think about me. Don't talk about me. Don't use my name like I'm not important. Don't use it like it's nothing, because if you do that, then you're not recognizing my authority, and we already know that when you do that, it leads you back to slavery, right? Fourth commandment, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. So have a day where you just rest, and you kind of recalibrate, you worship God, and you remember that you've chosen to make him your authority, and you're going to live life his way. Fifth commandment, honor your father and mother. Maybe difficult sometimes, but esteem the role of parents and honor and respect your parents. Sixth commandment, you shall not murder. So later, Jesus actually explains that this commandment extends to not even carrying grudges against people. It's like living a bitter life is not the better way to live, so learn to forgive. That was really poetic. That was like a song lyric right there. It was like, living the better life isn't the better way to live, so let's forgive. Thank you very much. Thanks. Number seven, you shall not commit adultery. It's like listen, hey, if you choose a partner in life and you tell that person that they can put their faith in you, like, don't violate that relationship. Don't violate the most important relationship that you've chosen for your life. Okay? That's what God's saying. Commandment number eight, you shall not steal. It's like, hey, listen, so many people in life go through life just taking and taking and taking and taking. That's not the person you want to be. Right? You don't want to live that way. Be someone who gives, not somebody who's always taking and taking what's not even theirs. Ninth commandment, you shall not bear false witness. So it's saying be a person of integrity, right? Speak truth. Don't lie. Be the kind of person that people realize that they can trust you. Be the kind of person who you don't find yourself getting caught in lies and now you're in trouble because you lied and you don't be that person. And then finally, the 10th commandment, you shall not covet. And don't always be wanting what you don't have, right? Like, just learn to be content with what you already have. Just learn to be happy with what you have instead of always feeling like you need more, okay? So those are the Ten Commandments. God gave those to the Israelites when they decided that they wanted to live in relationship with him. Here's the question I want to ask you about those Ten Commandments. When the Israelites received those commandments, and let's just say that they actually chose to live by them, okay, they actually live that way. Would they have been losing freedom or gaining freedom? I think the answer is very obvious. They would have been gaining freedom, Right? If they chose to live this way, they wouldn't be losing freedom by restricting themselves by these things. They would be gaining freedom in their lives. They would be gaining freedom, right? God is all about our freedom, and obeying God actually increases the freedom that matters most. Here's one way to look at this. People who are smarter than me have kind of realized and pointed out that in a sense, there's two types of freedom. There's freedom from, and then there's freedom for. So, like, freedom from is freedom from any kind of external constraint, freedom from anyone else telling me what to do. Okay, that's freedom from. But then there's another kind of freedom. It's freedom for. The freedom for living the kind of life that I truly want to live. The freedom for living the kind of life that will lead me to become the kind of person that I want to become, okay? When we typically think of freedom today, we think of freedom from. That's just the way we are. It's like, nobody's going to tell me what to do, right? You're not the boss of me now. You're not the boss of me. And we just want to be free. We don't want any kind of external constraints. We want to be free from, okay? But when we pursue freedom from external constraints, something strange happens. What happens in our lives, and you've experienced this lots of times, whether you thought about it or not, is that we actually lose freedom. We don't gain freedom. When you pursue freedom from, you lose freedom. And I know you don't think that's true. You're like, well, no, because we're all about freedom. But it is true, and we see this in our lives all the time. A couple quick examples. So like if you say, you know what? I'm free, so I don't have to study for my exams. You know, my teacher can tell me to study, but I don't need to study. Okay, you're pursuing freedom from. What happens? You don't get the grades you hope to get. Now you can't get into the college you wanted to get into, or you can't get the job that you wanted. And so now I can't have the life that I really wanted. I pursued freedom from, and what happened is ultimately I lost freedom. Right? Or let's say I say, you know what? I'm free, and so I don't have to be smart with my money. I'm going to go to a Starbucks two or three times a day. I'm going to go out to eat every single night because I am free. What happens? Well, now I realize because I pursued freedom from, I don't have enough money to go on the vacation that I've been dreaming about or to get out of debt or to buy something for someone I really... And so what happened is because I pursued freedom from, really, I lost freedom that matters more. I lost freedom. Or we say, you know what? I'm free, so I can drink as much as I want. Nobody can tell me with their morals and their... But then I realized that my drinking has started to get a hold of me. It's damaging my health, starting to embarrass my kids, it's hurting my marriage, it's threatening my job. And so finally I decide, well, I'm just going to quit drinking. And that's when I realize that I'm not free to quit drinking. I discover that I'm not free to do that. I can't. I lost freedom. You know, what's really ironic is that when it comes to drinking, how do people find freedom? Well, there's one way, one program that has worked for many, 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 many people, including some of you, I bet. The way I gain the freedom to stop drinking is by admitting that my willpower, that my personal authority over myself is actually limited. And so I'm taught to surrender myself, to turn my will over, to turn my authority in my life over to a higher power. And then if I do that, I start to find that I receive the power to become free to not drink. And so it's only when I recognize that I am not good at being the boss of me, and I turn my life over to someone else's authority, to God's authority, that I actually gain freedom. Not a freedom from external constraints, but a freedom to live the life that I really want to live, a life that is truly free. See, God is all about your freedom. God has always been about your freedom. When he had the world the way he wanted it, before we came in and screwed it all up, there's only one rule. And that rule was intended to give freedom to people, not to take it away. And when God gave the Israelites those Ten Commandments, he knew that if they lived by those rules, they would gain freedom in life. Then Jesus comes along. God comes to earth for us. And in Luke chapter 4, Jesus gives his first ever sermon. Okay, this is kind of his, here's why I've come kind of moment. And we'll put all the Bible verses on the screen for you. Luke chapter 4, verses 18 and 19. Jesus says, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners, and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." First time he gives this public sermon, and he says, "I came for people's freedom." Jesus would later say that he came to bring truth. Why did he come to bring God's truth? John chapter 8, verse 32. He says, "Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." John 8, 36, he says, "So then the Son sets you free, you'll be free indeed." It's a theme throughout the entire Bible. 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 17. "Now the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom." Galatians 5, 1, "It is for freedom that Christ has set us free." Galatians 5, 13, "You, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free." James, it's really interesting. James chapter 1, verse 25 and chapter 2, verse 12 talk about the laws of God, the commandments of God, the rules that God has given us. And here's what they're called: the law that gives freedom. The first reason to obey God, and maybe this is a surprise, is obeying God will actually increase your freedom. The second reason to obey God is because only God is worth obeying. Because only God is worth obeying. And this is where how you think about God is so critically important. Because if you think that God is kind of this tyrant who's trying to infringe on your freedom, you will find a way to rebel against him. We all will. That's just how we are as human beings. We're going to rebel against that kind of leadership or authority in our lives. There's a really well-known atheist. His name is Christopher Hitchens. He wrote a book called God is Not Great. Here's what he says. He says, "If the Bible were true, it would be a disaster, because it would mean living eternally under a divine totalitarian despot. It would be like living in a celestial North Korea, but worse, because at least you can die to get out of North Korea." Here's the question. Is he right? Is he right? Is that really the God of the Bible? I think if you read the Bible, it becomes abundantly clear that God is not a totalitarian despot. In fact, God is just the opposite. So think about this, okay? So God gives those Ten Commandments we saw, right, to the people of Israel because they had decided they wanted to have a relationship with him. Well, when God gave those Ten Commandments, it was actually part of a covenant that God was making with his people, okay? It's very interesting. Now, today, we know a lot more about ancient covenants than people have for a long time because of archaeology. We're learning a lot about covenants now. And a covenant was a means of establishing a relationship between two parties based on those two parties making a solemn vow to each other and therefore creating a relationship that did not exist previously. Okay? And the Ten Commandments were not just God imposing a list of rules to restrict the freedom of these people. No, what God was doing in that moment was he was making a covenant with this group of human beings, Israel. Now, with ancient covenants, what we know is that each party would get a copy of the covenant so that both parties would have a reminder of what they had agreed to and how they were to treat the other party and that they could keep. So when Moses brought down the Ten Commandments from the mountain, does anyone remember how many tablets those Ten Commandments were written on? Anybody remember? Yes, some of you are doing this to me. Peace, yeah. Two, that's right, two. And why? Why two? Well, a lot of people think that, well, it's because there was five commandments written on one tablet and five commandments on the other, and God was up in heaven going, "Why didn't I use a smaller font?" I just got carried away, big font, two tablet. No, that's not what happened. Each tablet had all 10 commandments. Both of them did. One copy was for Israel, and one copy was for God himself. God had a copy to remind him of what he had bound himself to by entering into this covenant. And then God gave both copies to the Israelites for them to hang on to. Now, let me tell you where this gets really cool. So what we now know is that in the ancient world, there were two kinds of covenants. One was called a unilateral covenant. And a unilateral covenant was when there was a much more powerful party and a much less powerful party, and they were entering into an agreement. And the other kind was a bilateral covenant. And when it was like both parties were kind of equally powerful, two equal parties. In a unilateral covenant, the more powerful party was always seeking something, right? Like, why else would they have to enter into this agreement, this relationship with this little less powerful party? And so it was a person or a country. Maybe they wanted grazing rights for their sheep, or maybe they wanted water rights, or they wanted a rite of passage through the other nation. So the covenant that God made with Israel was obviously a unilateral covenant, right? You have a much more powerful party, that would be God, and a much less powerful party, that would be Israel, the human beings. So here's a question. What did God get out of the covenant? It's always the more powerful is always seeking something, right? Now, Israel, smaller party, they got saved from being slaves in Egypt. They got a way of life that worked for them, that would give them freedom. They got a community. They got an identity. They got a destiny. They got a land to call their own. Israel got a lot out of the covenant. Question, what did God get out of the covenant? What was God seeking? God got someone to bless. God got someone he would love, someone to pour his affection out on and care for. Of course, he knew that the people that he was agreeing to love and care for would repeatedly break his heart. But he, even still, entered into this covenant with them. And that is God. He is not a totalitarian despot. He is a God who is so humble that he chose to enter into a covenant where he got nothing in return. He just promised to love people, even though mostly they would never choose to love him back. He is a God who is so humble, he chose to come to earth and become one of us. And in his life with us, he just served and served and served and never asked anything in return. He is a God who is so humble that eventually God himself was tortured and died. Why? So you could be free. So you could be free. Not so you could experience freedom from, but so you could experience freedom for. Freedom for God, free for love, free for living the life that you are meant to live and that you've always wanted to live, free to live a life of purpose and meaning and without shame and regret. Man, a God who would come down and give his life so that you could really live does not sound like a totalitarian despot to me. He does not sound like a God who's trying to bind you up in a restrictive straitjacket to me. No, he sounds to me like the kind of God that I want to believe in and that I want to obey, because he is worth obeying and because I want to be free. And the question that you need to answer is, do you want to be free? And do you want that God to be your God? We're going to give you a couple minutes to think about that, just to wrestle with those questions and how you should respond to them. Maybe you need to say yes to God for the first time and enter into a covenant with Him, a relationship with Him. And if you're feeling like, man, I think that's me, I think this is my moment, can I encourage you to talk to someone before you leave and let them know about that decision? We'll have people back behind the Velcro bar. I'll be back over here, and we'd love to know that you're making that decision, try to help you to walk through that decision. Maybe you've said yes in the past, but if we're just being honest this morning, you could look at your life and realize that I am not fully living my life under God's authority. There are things that God has asked of me that I am not doing. And maybe today is a day where you might rededicate yourself to living in that relationship, because God is a God worth obeying, and because you want to be free. It's a better life. So, band's going to play a song, and we'll give you that chance just to think and pray about that. And during this time, we also have communion available. Communion is a reminder that God came down from heaven, lived a life, suffered, and died for us so that we could be free. Communion is a piece of bread and a cup of juice that you'll find on the tables around the room, and they represent Jesus' body and blood given on the cross for us. And it's a way that we get to thank Him for making that sacrifice and kind of recommit ourselves to living for Him, because He lived and died for us. So if you'd like to take communion, you can go get it during the song. If you're like, I don't think I'm ready for that, it's totally fine. I'm so glad you're here. And you can just kind of hang out, listen to the song, and maybe take this chance to wrestle with those questions. Okay? I'm going to pray for you, and then we'll move into that time. God, thank you so much for loving us. Thank you for loving me, even though you knew when you invited me into this relationship that I would break your heart time and time again. Thank you that you love all of us so much that you're inviting every person in this room into a relationship with you, knowing that we're not going to fully obey, that we're going to break your heart. But it's not about following the rules. It's about you in love inviting us into a relationship and us in love saying yes. God, my ultimate prayer is that every person in this room would say yes and know and experience your love and start to live in the freedom that you offer to us. God, as we take this time, I want to invite you to just kind of speak into our lives. Maybe there's some people in this room who don't necessarily believe that you're even real. Maybe we could pray a prayer of, God, I don't know if you're real, but if you are, show me. God, would you speak truth into our lives and help us to know, as Jesus said, that your truth sets us free. God, I pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen.